down towards the near corner. Cody Eakin goes in shorthanded, feeds in front, score! It's Carlson! William Carlson shorthanded. Miller right point shot, score! Tipped out in front, and it's 4-0 Vegas! Here comes Lindbergh, going to get ahead of the defense. He pulls it away, goes circle, he shoots, he scores! Oscar Lindbergh! Now a breakaway, here's David Perron, all by himself, the righty down the middle, fakes, backhand score! David Perron, 1-0 Vegas! Here's Hunt, setting up his man in front, Carrier, score! It's his first goal, William Carrier, 7-0 Vegas!
And welcome in Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show on a game day. Golden Knights headed to Staples Center to play the LA Kings after a big win last night, 4-1 over the Anaheim Ducks. Clayton Hamilton here along with Frank Harnish and Ryan, the hockey guy Wallace. Going to get you ready for tonight's action. We're going to be joined by Eddie Garcia from Fox Sports National, covers the LA Kings. And good game last night, huh, guys?
An excellent game. A rough start in the first couple minutes of it, but from that point on, Malcolm Subban was excellent between the pipes. This team never says die. They came back, got the tie, then got the win and made it look easy in the final score. And as much as it was the 4-1 game and it was fun that way, John Gibson kept the Ducks in that game because it could have been a lot worse for Duck fans out there. In the second period, Vegas completely dominated, in my opinion.
Yeah, and not to mention the fact that the Anaheim Ducks dominated the first 15 minutes of the game. They only came away with one score. That was it. Malcolm Subban really was playing fantastic in the first period. He lets in the early one. Obviously, you can start to see that maybe the floodgates could open up for the Anaheim Ducks, who've been snake bit against this team. And Malcolm Subban shut the door. They had a really, really good penalty kill, the Vegas Golden Knights, and that sparked everything that was to come after.
And you have to be proud of the effort because, like you said, that first 15 minutes was just sort of an onslaught of Ducks offensively, but they were able to right the ship, and the panic didn't set in. And like you said, it very could have easily gone 2-0, 3-0 there in the first 12 minutes.
Yeah, they scored on one of the first two shots of the game. A minute 40 into the game, you're down 1-0. Anaheim's coming out. They're fired up. Their crowd gets into it. They have a very good record. I believe it's like 11-2-5 when they score the first goal of the game. We had talked about it in the pregame show, how good Vegas is when they score their first goal. Well, they didn't score the first goal. However, it should be remembered that when they don't score the first goal, they've still won 8 games. Now you can make it 9 games that they've won when they haven't scored first.
It's resiliency with this team, and that's what they're known for. This has kind of become the calling card for the team. Is, you know, if you can't beat the Golden Knights in the first 10 minutes of the game, because they're going to play the rest of those 50 minutes like they have to. And that's the thing with this team, is if they have a rough little stretch at the beginning of the game, then they're going to make up for it at the end. When they fall apart in the third period, that's when it gets to be difficult. But they haven't done that in a really long time, because they're well coached, they've adjusted, and they're a much better team now than they were at the beginning of the year. But Anaheim, 15 minutes of effort isn't going to get you a win against this team. They tired themselves out, and they only got one goal out of it. And as soon as that game was tied going into the second period, it was all over for the Ducks.
Let's be honest about it. If you want to say the last bad game that the Golden Knights have, it was probably the Carolina game, and they still managed to get a point out of that one when they obviously weren't pumped up for the game. They weren't as ready to play. And even against a decent team like the Hurricanes, they still got a point. This team is on a roll right now. This team is for real. This team is playing really, really well.
So what you're saying is 9-0-1 in your last 10 games is pretty good.
Pretty good. It's not bad.
Not bad for an expansion team?
It's serviceable.
Or not bad for like the entire NHL? Because I know of a few franchises right now, Buffalo and Edmonton, that would absolutely do anything for a 10-game point streak.
And a 10-game point streak is what they're on, and no signs of letting down. And as you had alluded to, the first 15 minutes or so were all Anaheim. But then, as so often that the fourth line does, it creates opportunities, it creates energy. And that's what it did last night leading up to your play of the game. Oscar Lindbergh and Tomasz Nosek making a play, getting the puck to Shea Theodore, who had this goal for the play of the game, brought to you by Best Mattress, Best Service, Best Selection, Best Price Guaranteed.
Down, Lindbergh in the battle, Nosek there too to work it loose. Here's Theodore with room, walks in, shot, score! Shea Theodore, the former Duck, goes goes off the post and in to tie the game.
Shea Theodore with a beautiful shot, walked it down close to the net, and then just roofed it right into the corner. The beautiful ping of the goal.
Yeah, and we talked about it several times last night in the postgame show, and Ryan, I'm sure that you saw the same thing. You see Shea Theodore work on that. What you work on sometimes is what comes through in the game. He's worked on that shot. He knew exactly where he was going with it. He had pinpoint accuracy, and he's probably taken that shot at least 1,000 times in his life, probably a couple hundred over at City National Arena alone. When you practice things and then you put that into the game, good things happen, and it did for Theodore, and you know that he was smiling last night scoring against the Ducks.
Yeah, that's number one. I'm sure that goal is probably going to be one of the more memorable ones. It's going to be hard to top the Tampa goal that he scored, but really, you look at Shea Theodore and you look at what he does, this is why he's so good. Because if he gets a chance in the offensive zone, typically he's going to score, or he'll set something up. He'll get his shots through. What I don't understand is how in the heck do the Ducks not cover this guy knowing that he has a lethal shot? And you got to feel for John Gibson, because John Gibson played it really well. He made himself very big. He was on his angle. It was just a perfect shot. I mean, there's literally nowhere else Shea Theodore could have put that puck except for the place that he did. And it was a fantastic play by him all the way around.
And the possession and the ability to start a play by this fourth line, I know we talk about it all the time, but Oscar Lindberg, Tomáš Nosek, keeping possession in the offensive zone and getting so much attention. I mean, if you look at the replay of that, there are five Ducks on the from the half of ice over to where the puck is, leaving Shea Theodore all alone.
Yeah, absolutely. And you put that line out there when things aren't going well. And we were talking about it. The penalty kill that the Vegas Golden Knights had before the Shea Theodore goal really set the tone for how the rest of the game would go. It was the first time in the game where the Golden Knights had possession, and they were a man down. You know, that's insane. But that really started to get their legs into it, and it was the fourth line guys, it was the unsung guys, the third and the fourth liners, that were starting that process, and it just was an extension. You put your fourth line out there when you need a little bit of energy and you need to play in the opposition zone. That's what they do well.
And make no mistake about it, the Ducks did dominate that first period. They outshot them, I believe, yep. It was 15-8. Mm-hmm. But then you look at the blocked shots. Vegas blocked 8 shots in that period. Anaheim only blocked 1 in that period of the game. So it could have been even worse. And then a couple that maybe went off the post or just wide of the net or whatever. It looked like the Ducks were doing everything right, that it was going to be a good night for Anaheim fans in the Honda Center. But that goal seemed to take the wind out of the sails for them, because all of a sudden, all the hard work they did, all the domination they had, and here they're looking at the end of the first period, and it's 1-1 again. And you know that in a locker room, they must have been going, are we going to lose to these guys again? I mean, we just dominated a period, and all we have to show for it is we're tied.
Yeah, well, nothing. We have nothing to show for it at all. And you're absolutely right. The Shea Theodore goal, to me, was the game. As soon as they went to the locker room tied 1-1 with this team, they were beaten. The Ducks had nothing left between the ears. And that's saying something when you have Ryan Kessler come back into the lineup. You have your captain, Ryan Getzlaff, back and healthy. Obviously, you're missing Corey Perry, but it's Corey Perry. Who cares? My point is, you've got mentally strong people in this organization, in this lineup, and you were defeated 20 minutes into the game.
And you have to think that for all the excitement of having Ryan Kessler back, although it may be inflated as to what one guy can do for the team, to have him come back and be greeted with a -3 can't feel good.
Well, but it's an extension of where he finished the year last year. I mean, Ryan Kessler has been not great when it comes to teams with good transition and speed. He's older. You lose a step. He's lost a step, especially now with a new hip.
You know, another thing that I did find interesting last night was as the Golden Knights started getting their game the way that they like to play it and playing Golden Knight hockey, mm-hmm. You heard the crowd for Vegas get louder and louder as that game went on, even in the Honda Center after the Christmas break, when they're excited about Kessler coming back. It's their first time, I believe it is, a 5-game homestand, and you heard Vegas fans. We're used to that T-Mobile, and you expect that. Everybody comes to Vegas and travels. But I'm starting to be impressed by the Vegas fans starting to travel as well. And I know it's just to L.A., but the fact that they could get the tickets, go to the games, and everything else, I think that's a really good sign for this team down the road. This team has not just captured the imagination of Las Vegas. They've caught the imagination of the entire hockey world.
I completely agree. I mean, there's nobody alive, I don't think, that can look at what this team is doing right now and say, wow, I respect that. I don't think you're going to find anybody, you know?
We're not just down the 15 to Anaheim, but also traveling to Henderson at Born and Raised last night where the Soob chants, they made the road trip as well, the restaurant full of them on each and every save. And Malcolm Subban was your player of the game. Your player of the game brought to you by Brinkus Team Realty, your home sold, guaranteed for saves like this.
Fowler at the point to keep it in. Long drive, tip, save made by Subban. Rebound, save again. He stopped Henrik and Silverberg.
Malcolm Subban saving 27 of 28 shots. Didn't have to make the miraculous or the spectacular too often last night. Very good positioning. A good night for Dave Pryor.
Yeah, and not a ton of shots. It's not like he's facing 40 or 45 shots, but enough shots to keep you in the game and keep that rhythm going as well. It always looks good to people when, he didn't have to face, he faced like 15 to 18 shots. Sometimes those can be harder games, so there was enough of a workload there. But certainly, after the first goal that they got, 140 into the game, Subban played absolutely incredible. After that, shut the Ducks down completely. Everything seemed to go Vegas's way, and this is just becoming more and more fun almost on a nightly basis watching this team. The superlatives have all been used up, but we're gonna have to rehash them over and over again.
And Ryan, when you go on the road, you're hoping to get a split, at least get half of the points available. They've already done that playing with house money tonight.
Yeah, but they're also going to be playing a Los Angeles Kings team that's going to have their first game after the Christmas break. And the rust that you saw on the Vegas Golden Knights, I would not be surprised if you see that rust on the Los Angeles Kings as well.
And that's what I was going to say. Normally, when you're the team playing the back-to-backs, like we heard it from Washington, they just played in Arizona last night and they played an overtime game, so they're tired because they're playing back-to-backs. And that is the scenario a lot of times. But since everybody's coming off the break, I would think that actually playing back-to-backs, it might be more advantageous for Vegas because they have that game and they have their skating legs back. And like you said, now the Kings are the team coming in that they've had 4 days off.
Yeah, and you look at the Golden Knights, they're kind of a team that's built for back-to-backs, or at least to be successful in back-to-backs, because they spread their ice time. They roll four lines and three defensive pairs. No one line takes up a lot of minutes. No one defensive pair takes up a lot of minutes. So they're a lot fresher for every single game that they play.
Oh, yeah, and you get Marc-Andre Fleury.
Well, that's a nice luxury, isn't it? And it's funny, too, because it's like Malcolm Subban lets in a goal on the second shot of the game, faces 15 shots in the first 20 minutes, goes 14 for 15, really when the game is on the line there. And he just does it so calmly and is able to project that confidence that he has found under Dave Pryor. Malcolm Subban is 9-2-0 on the year. This is a guy that George McPhee said he wasn't even sure if he could play at this level, and he's 9-2-0 and only getting better.
It's almost like sometimes he gets that first goal and he gives it up, and it's like he gets it out of his system, and he's like, okay, now it's time to focus and get down to work and do everything. I also thought it was interesting because I love the novice fans and the new fans coming into this sport, because last night when we were at Born and Raised, you heard the Subban chants all over the place, even on shots that were blocked out of the defense that never got through and anywhere near him, but the crowd, they still love saying that so much. If there was, if anybody even teed one up and shot it anywhere near the net, if it went wide, if it was blocked or whatever happened, as long as it didn't go in, they were doing the chants.
I love that because it's such a chantable name. It really is. And it happens so organically, right? Like, Subban's all of a sudden thrust into the spotlight. He starts making saves, and it just started. It just sparked out of nowhere at T-Mobile Arena, and it was only a couple of games. He'd only started like two games, and then it became a thing. It was crazy.
And it was awesome. And there were actually people out there when he left Boston. I've had some people tell us this, including some of the people that listen to this show regularly, that they thought that Malcolm Subban was the worst goalie they'd ever seen, period. Not worst NHL, not worst in professional, worst goalie they'd ever seen.
Wow. That's, I mean, Listen,
that might be a little harsh, but if there's any truth at all to that, Dave Pryor is a genius.
Well, no, I mean, it didn't work for him in Boston, and that's okay. It didn't work in Providence. That's okay. But confidence is a thing. You bring a guy in with raw talent, and you have to understand Malcolm Subban wasn't a goalie his entire life. It's kind of a recent switch in positions for him. He's only been playing the position for 6, maybe 7 years. So we're not talking about a guy that started with goalie pads from the time he was 5 years old. But we're also talking about a guy who is incredibly athletic and has all these raw physical talents that can be molded into something so much more than what he is now. Just imagine if Dave Pryor can take all of those talents, all of that genetic talent he has, and mold it into something that is positionally sound and reads the plays well and understands the games and understands all of the different angles. And then he can rely on his athleticism to make saves that he should never make. He will be very, very good. He's close to where he could be, but he's still not at his potential yet.
And that's the exciting part, not just for Dave Pryor and Coach Gerard Gallant, that they're already starting to foster this much confidence in him. He has the confidence of his teammates. He certainly has the confidence of the fan base in this community, and it will only get better for Malcolm Subban. This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton Hamilton, Ryan the Hockey Guy Wallace, Frank Harnish on a game day. It's going to see the Golden Knights take on the LA Kings at 6:30 for the pregame, 7 o'clock for a puck drop. But, fellas, there is some news going on in and around the National Hockey League. We will begin in Pittsburgh, where the injury bug has struck again, and the Pittsburgh Penguins have already announced that defenseman Chris Letang and goaltender Matt Murray will not be available to play against Carolina tomorrow night. Letang did not play last night against Columbus because of a lower body injury. Matt Murray's injury not disclosed, but considered day-to-day. They will be also without forward Brian Rust and defenseman Chad Ruweldy.
Well, let's just say this. The Pittsburgh Penguins want to put Chris Letang on the trading block, and Chris Letang can't play. It's a good way to see how your team will respond to playing without Chris Letang. So my guess is they're not going to play very well. But that's just me. Then again, the Pittsburgh Penguins haven't been very good this entire year, so there's that.
Well, I mean, they won a cup without Chris Letang, so how important can he be? They should just ship him here to someplace.
No, exactly.
Get rid of the guy. And as far as Matt Murray, they have Marc-Andre Fleury backing him. Oh, wait, no, they don't anymore, do they? So
they also had Marc-Andre Fleury and, you know, Nick Bonino and Chris Kunitz and, you know, a third and a fourth line center and Matt Cullen. So, you know, there's a lot of things the Pittsburgh Penguins don't have right now, but they do have Sidney Crosby, they do have Evgeny Malkin, and they've got, you know, Chris Letang for now, and Matt Murray is often injured. So there it is.
So you're saying they might not want to print up those three-peat t-shirts just yet?
I'm saying they might not make the playoffs.
Nice. I wonder if they'll be mathematically eliminated by April
Fool's
Day.
I said yes.
Yes, you did.
3 days left in the season.
Going out on a limb.
No, not a limb. Yes, a strong limb. Trouble in Winnipeg.
Uh-oh.
Mark Scheifele will miss 6 to 8 weeks with an upper body injury after crashing into the boards last night on the back end of a hit from Brandon Davidson.
It's not good.
He was in a lot of pain last night. Sort of went in on his knees, straight into, but the shoulder was rough.
So this is the thing about the Scheifele injury that I think was very interesting. If Winnipeg struggles and they fall out of a playoff position while Scheifele is injured, then it won't be viewed as Paul Maurice failing again. It'll, oh man, Winnipeg was right there, but they lost Scheifele, and hey, bad luck with injuries. Even though they were starting their decline before Scheifele got injured, and they were probably going to miss the playoffs because Maurice is a bad coach. So if nothing else, Mark Scheifele has probably saved Paul Maurice's job.
Well, obviously, that remains to be seen, but I will say this about the injury. I know they just say upper body. I would be absolutely semi-amazed if he doesn't have a separated shoulder, the way he went into that board and the way he was holding it. It also looked like he was holding his wrist, mm-hmm. too, so I think he hurt more than just the shoulder. But that shoulder looked like it that did not look good whatsoever, and he was laying down there for a long time. We see guys going into the boards all the time. You hit it at a bad angle or something, which is what it looked like happened to Scheifele there. I wish him all the best. I always want to see the best players in the world on the ice, but when it'll be a while before he comes back because he was in visible pain. I know he's a hockey player, but they're still humans.
Scary diagnosis for the Rangers' Chris Kreider. He's going to be out indefinitely because of a blood clot in his right arm. Blood clots, super scary. It's what ended Chris Bosch's career in the NBA, never able to recover from that.
Yeah, all you can say right now is you hope Chris Kreider is going to be okay. You hope that he gets the medical treatment, takes all the time he needs, and he can get back on the ice.
Well, and you hope that it doesn't repeat and get any worse or something like that, or even if it clears up, sometimes they have a tendency to come back or whatever. It's nothing to mess around with.
Arizona Coyotes' Zach Rinaldi has been suspended 6 games for his hit on Sammy Girard.
Yeah, Zach Rinaldo's garbage.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt, it was a complete cheap shot. He makes a hit that's illegal in the first place. Then he sucker punches somebody else who's just skating by because he thinks the guy's going to want to fight him and stick up for his teammate or whatever. It's just, it's ridiculous.
The NHL has learned nothing from Todd Bertuzzi. Absolutely nothing. It's a joke. It is an absolute joke. And they set the bar so low with Bertuzzi that idiots like Zach Rinaldo think they can get away with this on the ice.
Ottawa Senators defenseman Frederick Claesson has been suspended for 2 games for his hit on Noel Akari.
It just, I mean, I love the game of hockey, and I have nothing wrong with fighting when it serves a purpose and physical play and all that kind of stuff. But the cheap shot stuff, it's ridiculous. There's no room for it. There's no need for it.
It's funny how, as fighting has gone out of the game, suspensions, it would seem, have gone up because, again, you have idiots that think that they can just do this stuff and they're free from any type of repercussions on the ice, off the ice. The NHL is getting it wrong.
I think they are as well. I sort of miss the good old days when, like I said, you took a run at somebody like that and then there was a consequence that was not just coming from the league.
The players policed the games themselves, mm-hmm. and they did a better job of it.
There was a code mm-hmm. in fighting. There is a code in fighting. Talk to Brad May about it once, you know, just mm-hmm. The next time you see him. He'll tell you the game was a lot safer and a lot cleaner when guys had to pay for their actions with their fists. It's just the way that it is. And the NHL is taking that out of the game, and garbage players like Zach Rinaldo, like Radko Gudas, are taking advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. I could not agree more. When we come back, we're going to hit up Eddie Garcia down in L.A., talk a little Kings, preview a tonight's game. You're listening to the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for hockey in the Valley. And welcome back, Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. Clayton, Frank, Ryan getting ready on a game day. It's going to see the Vegas Golden Knights at 24-9-2 take on the LA Kings live from Staples Center. And we are grateful to have Eddie Garcia from Fox Sports National Covers the Kings join us. Welcome, Eddie. Good to talk to you.
Hey, guys. Good to talk to you again. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's always great when you're on. I haven't talked to you in a little while, so hope you've had a good holiday and all the best in 2018. And enjoy hearing you with Ben Mahler on a pretty much nightly basis, it seems, these days.
Yeah, thanks. Good to be back with you, and glad to hear things are going well with you again there, Frank.
Yeah, no, it's always great. You know, I know Vegas is really excited about hockey. The Vegas Golden Knights have kind of taken over the entire hockey world. What is the feeling in L.A. about this team? Because this is not your typical expansion team.
Well, I would think the feeling is the same as it is everywhere else, that nobody saw this coming. It's one of the great, you know, I know a lot of, you know, media people, TV, radio, whatnot, are going to start talking about the, you know, the review of 2017 and what are the great sports stories from the past year. And if Vegas isn't included in that, then they're blind, because this is a tremendous story. Nobody saw this coming. When I say nobody, I mean nobody saw this coming. I think we thought, you know, at best, this was a team that maybe could compete for a playoff spot. You know, division title and President's Trophy contenders, that's ridiculous. So we're talking about, as you guys well know, the greatest season for an expansion franchise ever in any sport, and it's not even close. And barring a complete unforeseen collapse, I mean, they're going to be far and away the greatest first-year expansion team in the history of sports. So it's a great story. It's awesome. You know, we've talked about them a lot on our podcast. Love the way they play. They're exciting. The atmosphere in Vegas, I haven't been there yet. I still hope to get there this season. Looks unbelievable. You know, Bill Foley and company could not have written a better script other than, you know, winning the Stanley Cup. And, you know, that seems ridiculous. But at the same time, is it really? I mean, we'll see. The playoffs are a different animal. But like I said, it's been a great story. It's been great for hockey. And I'm sure you guys are just kind of pinching yourself every day to see that what this team's done.
Yeah, it's been phenomenal just covering and being around the team and seeing how they've gelled together. But another storyline going into this season that I don't think a lot of people saw or really thought would be a thing was the resurgence of Dustin Brown. Talk to us a little bit about what has made Dustin Brown so effective this year.
Well, you're right. I think when you look at the LA Kings, you thought, okay, what do they have to do to be a playoff team? And to me, Andrei Kopitar was number one. He had to return to being an elite forward, and he has. And Jonathan Quick was going to have to stay healthy and be an elite goaltender, and he has. And usually when you have a team that's doing better than a lot of people expect, something unexpected has to happen. I think it's absolutely been Dustin Brown and his production, and it's been nothing spectacular. It's him just, frankly, going hard to the net and getting in front of the net and being a consistent presence in front of the net. If you look at his goals scored this year, almost all of them have been deflections, you know, and he's also obviously making things difficult for the goaltenders as far as seeing the puck, which helps the teammates out. So he's been just a great net front presence for them. Nothing spectacular. I think the one thing that he has taken advantage of is getting number one power play minutes. And earlier in the year, I think he was really doing a great job. And again, doing the same thing, but I think John Stevens, the new head coach, promoted from assistant coach, I think he showed a lot of confidence in Dustin and said, look, I'm going to give you the opportunity. It's up to you to take advantage of it, but I'm not going to, you know, you're not going to be buried on the third line. You're going to play on the top line, and you're going to play top power play unit minutes. And he's taken advantage of it. So it has been one of the bigger stories for the Kings and why they've been so good so far this year. But again, it's nothing too creative. It's just him going to the net and being a presence in front of the net and deflecting pucks in net.
You talked about Jonathan Quick and him staying healthy and how much that means to the team. I watched a lot of the Kings games last year, and it seemed like they got some pretty good goaltending when Quick wasn't around, but there's something about him being on the ice and in net for the team that seems to lift the whole team up and maybe make them play with a little bit more confidence or maybe a little bit more freewheeling style that seems to equate to them being more successful on the ice.
Yeah, 100%. And I know a lot of people talked about that last year, that Jonathan Quick being out wasn't the issue because Peter Budaj came out of nowhere, and he put up good numbers. But it's just not the same. Jonathan Quick is a leader on this team, and not having him in the lineup did have an effect on the team. I think they played even more defensive than normal, even though they're a defense-first type of team, and that took away from the offense, and that affected their goals scored, and that was the huge issue with the Kings last year. And it's easy to just point at the offense and say, you know, you're not scoring enough goals. But I think that the Jonathan Quick injury had an effect on, the entire team. I think his presence in net, it gives confidence to the rest of his teammates that they, you know, if Peter Budaj is back there, and again, no disrespect to him, he did a great job. But if he's back there, I think you feel like as a defenseman, there's not a lot of margin for error there. With Jonathan Quick, you feel like, okay, every once in a while I can make a mistake and he'll bail me out. So, yeah, I think Jonathan Quick being in there, and he's putting up the numbers this year, he's in the Vezina discussion. It's a confidence thing, and like I said, I don't know if a lot of people think of goaltenders as leaders of a team because they're kind of back there and they're isolated and they they're not a part of, on the bench, you're not talking to them, maybe you talk in the locker room, maybe you don't, but He is a leader on this team. His presence is desperately needed, and him being back in net and playing well is a huge for the Kings.
I want to talk to you about a name that probably a lot of Vegas Golden Knights fans don't really know, and that's Alex Iafallo. He started off the year playing with Kopitar and Brown. It seems like he's been moving around a little bit since Marian Gaborik came back into the lineup. But just talk about Alex Iafallo, how he plays the game, and what he brings to this team that makes them a little bit more dynamic than they used to be.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that, you know, you don't know what you're going to get when you sign one of these college players. And even though he had a great collegiate career, it's a step up to the NHL. So how much is he going to contribute? You know, you're thinking maybe a third-line guy who can put a puck in the net here and there. Nobody saw him playing on the top line, especially a guy like Mike Camilleri, who I thought was – he probably thought he was going to get maybe second-line minutes. But when Iafallo gets on the first line, it has the domino effect, and now Mike Camilleri is playing on the third line. He's not happy. He wants to be traded, so they send him off to Edmonton. But he's a speed guy. Alex Iafallo is a speed guy. You've got, you know, Dustin Brown is your power forward. Andre Kopitar is kind of your playmaker who can obviously put the puck in the net. And Iafallo is the speed on that line. And I think it really shows on his forecheck. I mean, he gets on the defenseman, and he's not going to hit you hard, but he's going to pressure you and hopefully make you pass the puck before you want to. Maybe you just send it around the boards, and the Kings are going to be there to hold it in, and suddenly you've got a possession in the other team's zone. So he's been really good at that. I don't think he will say this, but he's probably a little bit disappointed he hasn't scored more goals, but he is having an effect on the offense, and he is part of the reason why Brown and Kopitar have been playing so well. So he should feel good about that. I'm sure the coaching staff, the other players are saying, look, you're not scoring goals like a typical number one line guy, but you're affecting things. You're making positive things happen. So, you know, be happy with that. So, you know, goals will come eventually. But I just think his speed on the forecheck and making things happen in the other team's zone when you dump it in has been a real key for the Kings.
Eddie Garcia from Fox Sports National joining the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show. And Eddie, when you look at this Kings team, the real theme of the season has been streaks. They've got off to a really good start. They've had lulls of losing streaks. What is it about this team that has caused that inconsistency from one week to the next?
That's a good question. I don't know. There's been times where the Kings have looked like the best team in the NHL, and then there's been times when they've looked like, they play down to the level of their competition. It's not been as bad this year as it has been in the past couple of years. But, you know, I think the Kings, you know, they're one of those teams, when there are points available, they need to take advantage of it, and they need to get those wins against the quote-unquote lesser opponents. And they've done a little bit better job of that, but I can't really speak to why the consistency hasn't been there. You know, they haven't played that great at home, which is surprising. I never understand this, because you see this swing from one season to the next, and especially with a team like the Kings, they're basically the same team they were a year ago. But they were really good at home last year, and now they're okay. They're not bad. You know, we see some other teams really struggle at home, like Edmonton. I can't figure that out, but. You know, they need to get. They've been really good on the road. I think they need to be a little better at home. They've been also. It's kind of funny tonight. You know, they're facing an opponent that's playing on back-to-back nights. And we've seen a lot of these for the Kings, where a team will go into Anaheim one night and then come to LA the next. And you think that's a big advantage, but for whatever strange reason, it hasn't been. And the Kings have seen a lot of number two netminders, and that hasn't been the advantage that you would think it would be. So. I'm not sure that they can put their finger on it at this point. I mean, they're very happy with where they are, believe me. But they want to be more consistent. I think they also want their power play to be a lot better. But other than that, I think they're pretty happy with what they're going through right now.
Well, one thing that has been a big advantage for them is that Anze Kopitar is Anze Kopitar again this year. What's been the difference between this year and last year? Is he done something different? Was it an off-season stuff? Was last year just a bad year and it happens? Or because he is certainly one of the team leaders and one of the stars of this team, and him playing at the level he is playing is a big reason for their success.
Yeah, that's no question. Like I said, going into this year, if you asked me what was the number one key, it was that Andre Kopitar had to return to being an elite-level center. And I think he just had a bad year. I don't know what to make of it. There's always the secretive. Is there some injury that no one's revealing? But, you know, in hockey, so many guys are dealing with things, and you just have to play through it and still be productive. So, you know, I think it was just an off year for him. If he would have had another off year this year, then I would start to be concerned. But he has bounced back strong. He is, again, I think, one of the players you talk about for – certainly the Selke Trophy. He still got the defensive game, which hadn't gone away last year. But, of course, the production is – when you pay a guy $10 million a year, you're expecting him to be one of your top scorers as well. I mean, it's great to have an all-around game, and it's great to be one of the best all-around forwards in the league, but you still have to be productive, especially on a team like LA, which, you know, last year was lacking goal scoring. So he's stepped up. He's already scored more goals this year than he did all of last year, and again, he's been huge for him. Still plays the great all-around game. He can set guys up. He can score. You know, he really has the whole package, so him being good is really big for the Kings this year. But I don't know what the difference is, honestly. They change things a little bit in the offseason to try and mix it up as far as your preparation physically and, change diet. I mean, guys do a lot of different things. Dustin Brown's been doing that for years. It hadn't helped him. So, I'm not sure exactly why he had the slide last year, but it's great to see him back up where he has been in the past.
One of the guys I want to talk about is Drew Doughty. Now, Erik Karlsson came out on record and said that when he goes to free agency, he's going to get paid what he's deserved wherever he ends up playing. And Drew Doughty kind of echoed those same things. There have been comments about Drew Doughty saying that it would be interesting or fun to play for the Toronto Maple Leafs because he's from Ontario. But it just seems like the amount of hysteria in Ottawa over Erik Karlsson's comments, we haven't really seen that much in L.A. Do you think that there's any chance Drew Doughty goes anywhere else in free agency?
I think it's pretty slim. I think he is really happy in L.A. Although it would be intriguing, I guess, for any kid from Ontario to play for the Maple Leafs. You know, Drew Doughty actually grew up a Kings fan, which is odd. And he's always said that he kind of likes being out of the fishbowl. He knows what it would be if he went to Toronto and played there, what his personal life would be, what it would be like walking the streets, that kind of thing. And I think he does enjoy that in L.A., where, yeah, he'll be recognized occasionally, but he can go to the grocery store, and for the most part, no one's going to really bother him. He said that as long as the Kings are contending, that he wants to stay here. And, you know, I think that was before the season. He wanted to see how this season played out. I think losing, I mean, nobody likes losing, but I think for a guy like Drew Doughty, it's about winning the games and being successful and being in the mix. And the Kings are doing that this year. I think he's happy with the way the team's playing. I think he's happy with the organization and the direction they're going in. So he said as long as they're a relevant team that he wants to be here, I think the Kings obviously are going to do everything they can to keep him here. I would be very surprised if Drew Doughty leaves. I think the chances are small. Erik Karlsson, on the other hand, you got a lot of turmoil going on in Ottawa. You've got an owner who's made veiled threats about relocation. You've got an owner talking about cutting payroll. Erik Karlsson has said pretty much, you're not getting any kind of hometown discount from me. So that's a pretty different situation. I think Drew Doughty, I really think he's staying in Los Angeles.
Well, one guy that didn't stay in Los Angeles, not necessarily his choice, but in the expansion draft, Braden McNabb did come to the Vegas Golden Knights. What's the sentiment in L.A. about him? Is there any surprise at how good he's been playing and the fact that, essentially, he's the first guy on this roster that got a contract extension from the team?
I think a lot of people are happy for the success he's had. I don't know that any Kings fan is wringing their hands over, you know, losing Braden McNabb. I think a lot of people heard that was going to be the player that the Knights were going to take in the expansion draft, so it wasn't a surprise. So, look, I loved his physical play. I talked to you guys when you drafted him and you had asked me, what are you going to get at him? You know, he's got that great hip check along the boards when a guy is coming in with the puck. The Kings missed that little bit of physical play. The Kings are not a real physical defensive unit. You know, Drew Doughty's not going to hit a lot of people. Jake Muzzin's not going to hit a lot of people. Braden McNabb had that in his game, and I enjoyed that, and I missed that. But, I think we're happy for him. He was a good teammate here. He was a good guy. I'm sure you guys well know. And just is a good, solid player. He's going to do his job at his own end, provide a little bit of physical play, maybe chip in a goal here or there. But he's just a good, solid defenseman. And, I will say it was a little surprising to see kind of the first guy the Golden Knights locked up was Braden McNabb.
Well, Eddie, we truly appreciate you taking the time to spend with us. We look forward to you getting out here to Las Vegas and see us in person. What's coming up on the Puck Podcast?
Oh, gosh. Well, happy to be back after the Christmas break there. We've got the Winter Classic coming up, World Junior Championships, and, you know, just kind of projecting as the new year starts, are we going to keep seeing, you know, some surprises like the Golden Knights and the New Jersey Devils and that type of thing. And I will say this as we go, guys. You know, we talked before the Knights took the ice about potential rivalries. I know they've only played once, but I'm liking this Kings-Vegas kind of rivalry. I know there's some Kings fans were there in L.A. I'm sure there'll be some Vegas fans here in L.A. tonight. And when you throw in a battle for the division, that adds a little bit extra to it. So looking forward to this rivalry, you know, continuing. It's looking looking good early on.
As are we. That's Eddie Garcia, Fox Sports National, a Puck podcast. Going to look forward to tonight's game. We got 6:30 for the pregame, 7 o'clock for puck drop. LA Kings and your Vegas Golden Knights. When we come back, we're going to take a quick peek in on one of the guys that was here at development camp that we got to get to know a little bit well. This is the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show, Fox Sports Radio, your home for Knights hockey in the Valley.
Nosek fell over. Nosek finds the puck, taps it left. Theodore starts ahead. He shoots and scores! The former Duck Shea Theodore ties it up. Out of the box comes Cody Eakin, and he grabs the puck. He starts in right side through the circle. He shoots. He scores! Cody Eakin! The crowd erupts at Honda Center. The Golden Knights fans in the house. And the team has a 2-1 lead to support the visiting fans. Here's Josh Manson up the right side. Stolen away. Here's Marchessault left circle. Looks to the middle, feeds it in front. Carlson scores! 3-1 Vegas. 30 seconds into the period. Puck tip backwards for Schmidt. Scans ahead, finds Howla, deals left. Perron shoots and scores! Empty net goal for David Perron. Vegas leads 4-1.
And 4-1 was how it would end last night. The Golden Knights reaching 50 points. They're back at it tonight against the LA Kings at 6:30 for your pregame show, 7 o'clock for puck drop. Frank and I will be out at Parkway Tavern 215 and Flamingo for all of the action. Come on out, watch the game with us. Say hello as they take on the Kings in the second half of a back-to-back. And guys, remember development camp?
Oh, yeah. Had a great time.
Development camp was fun.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Got to see a lot of guys that are on the radar, maybe not draftable, but invited to camp on the radar. Do you remember a fella by the name of Sebastian Vidmar?
I played
Union College. He's in the news. Little news about Sebastian Vidmar.
Yep.
You know that Sebastian Vidmar has never finished in the top 25 in scoring in his college career, but young Sebastian has notched more third period assists than anyone in NCAA hockey over the past 2 years, earning him the nickname Mr. Third Period.
That's almost as good as Justin Williams' Mr. Game 7, but not quite.
So yeah, Sebastian Vidmar, top 10 in a third period scoring, as are the Union Flying Dutchman.
That's clutch with a capital C.
They have 59 total goals this year.
Mm-hmm.
42% of them have come in the third period.
No way!
Wow.
How many wins do they have?
They're ranked number 19 in the country, but I do not have their record on here, but they're ranked at number 19. And he was asked about this, and he said, all we know is in the later parts of the game, we have legs under us. We know that's one way we can break teams down, by having the legs and working hard all week. I wonder who talked to him about working hard.
It shows that you pick up something at those development camps. It also shows that if you play really poorly for the first two periods, you have a lot left in the tank in the third.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes it also shows their coach probably, their theory probably is keep it close for the third because we'll get them then, because apparently they do more often than not.
Yeah, that's they're 87th overall in points scored in Division One, but as I said, 42% of them right there in the third period.
They pace themselves.
How about that? Sebastian Vidmar, perhaps we will see him again this summer.
Maybe.
You don't seem thrilled about young Sebastian.
Will we see another Wolverine to Buckeye assist
yeah,
this summer?
That's what I really want to know. Stick with us. We got the game coming up tonight. T.C. Martin, the doctor, is next.